last month, WNYC's Matt Katz spent a week filling in for me in the host chair. He covered a report by the Associated Press, which found that in January, Immigrations and Customs Enforcement was force-feeding 9 detainees on a hunger strike in an El Paso detention facility. In Hudson County, New Jersey, an ICE detainee named Theodore Galitza heard that first segment.
Theodore is sitting there in his cell in the Hudson County Jail in New Jersey. He's listening to WNYC. He actually got into WNYC living on the Upper East Side. He's a handyman, and that's how he followed news from Ukraine, where he's from, when there was conflict with Russia.
Theodore was surprised by something he heard during Matt's interview about force-feeding of ICE detainees. It was something that Associated Press reporter Garance Burke said.
No one we've spoken with has heard of this actually occurring before, which puts us in really uncharted territory for the government to be feeding people against their will.
Theodore said, well, wait a second, I was force-fed back in November. So he ended up calling the WNYC newsroom. I ran out and talked to him and found out more about his story. And now we know that there was force-feeding going on before we had originally realized.
Theodore found himself in the U.S. because he feared persecution in his home country of Ukraine. WNYC's Matt Katz brings us the rest of his exclusive story.
In 2017, an asylum officer had determined that he had reasonable fear of persecution at home. It's the first step toward gaining asylum. He was concerned about conscription in the army in Ukraine, where he'd have to go and fight the Russians, and that was related to his case. So he wins this reasonable fear interview. So he goes along, he's supposed to go along to the next process of asylum. Now, he had a criminal history. He had a burglary charge from the 90s, and then he had a larceny charge more recently that he had done a little bit of time on. But he was released from that. And because he had been released by federal officials related to the criminal cases, and because he had won this first step in the asylum case, he didn't think he needed to be held by ICE while this case was proceeding. Now, of course, asylum seekers are increasingly getting locked up under the Trump administration. It's not always happening, but it does happen. But he thought that it wasn't right for him and he needed to be free to allow due process to take its course. So that's why on September 5th at the Bergen County Jail in New Jersey, he began this hunger strike.
After this, we know that when Theodore was on this hunger strike, ICE transferred him from New Jersey to a processing center in El Paso, Texas. And that is the processing center where we understand that 9 men were force-fed earlier this year. I'd love for you to help us understand why the transfer. Is force-feeding allowed in New Jersey, or does it have to happen in one facility in Texas?
You know, that's unclear. ICE has not answered my questions about that. But it is interesting to note that the only force-feeding cases that have so far come to light have involved immigrants at this particular facility in El Paso. Now, Galitza's case seems to have happened before the Associated Press reported that 9 Indian men and 3 Cuban men had been on a hunger strike and then were force-fed by court order at this facility. But also, there was a court order to force-feed him from November. So either the courts there perhaps are more amenable to this because this does require a court order for the force feeding, or perhaps the facility in El Paso is more equipped to undertake this. But either way, it was clear that Galitza, for no reason that he said he was told, he was taken one night, brought to JFK Airport. He was, you know, a hunger strike, so he was quite weak. He describes being dragged through the airport, put on a plane with 2 ICE agents and flown to Texas, where he stayed for the duration of his hunger strike and for the 2 weeks of force feeding.
When we talk about force feeding, you actually were able to talk to Theodore about what the process is like, right? And in your interview with him, he describes a tube being put through his nose that was long enough to reach his stomach, which seems pretty awful. And let's take a listen to the rest of it.
When they fished the tube through my nose, you know, the damage, my esophagus, and the feeling was like you have something in your throat and it's hard to swallow. It's like you have a strep throat. It's very difficult to swallow, like a very sharp needle going through your throat every time I swallow.
How many days was Theodore force-fed, Matt?
It was about 2 weeks. This happened multiple times a day. He's fed with something called Boost. It's a nutrition supplement that you could actually get at the drugstore. And he was held down. He describes being held down by 12 people, nurses, officers, and then a doctor who administered this. It was also, he said, videotaped this whole process. He's also sick at this point. He hadn't eaten anything other than water for 2 months. I mean, he describes at one point during his hunger strike, before the force feeding, he describes going to a bond hearing where he was so weak that he fell, hit his head, bruised his arm and ribs, and then urinated himself while he was unconscious. So he was already in bad shape when he was then submitted to get this force feeding done to him. And it lasted for 2 weeks.
After the 2 weeks, was Theodore sent back to New Jersey?
Yeah. He said that he was told by an ICE agent that if he stopped the hunger strike, he would soon be released. It was indicated to him that he would be released, but that did not happen. But once he stopped the hunger strike and started eating meals again at the facility in El Paso, he was then transferred back to New Jersey, and he's now at a different jail in New Jersey, Hudson County Jail.
What's next for Theodore?
He has a hearing later in March, and he's hoping that he wins his asylum case and is able to go back and live freely in Manhattan and continue. He had a small business doing home improvements, and he's hoping to continue to go back doing that. But he has still several legal hurdles in front of him.
Do we know whether or not he plans to take legal action because of the force feeding?
He has not indicated that, but I did ask, like, what are you supposed to do? You could see the predicament that the government is in. They do not want people dying in their care. In fact, the court order is quite explicit. It goes through the legal arguments for why this is justified, and it says that the facility that contracts with ICE must provide for the medical care of detainees and may, quote, take whatever reasonable actions to non-consensually feed, hydrate, medically test or exam until adequate oral intake of nutrients is achieved and detainee Theodore Galitza's life and permanent health is no longer threatened. So I asked him, well, what should ICE be doing for those who are on hunger strikes? And he said,
instead of listening to me or bring my issue to certain authorities who can make a decision, you are violating my rights, even my civil right of being in a hunger strike. The whole purpose of hunger strike was to draw attention to field office director in El Paso or in New York so they can see clearly that I can go through the due process and being redeemed by a court.
And it's actually a common complaint I hear from detained immigrants that there's no ICE officers that come into the facility every day to talk to them about when their next hearing is. They don't know what's going on with their cases. In most instances, they don't have attorneys. And he expressed it very simply, like he just wanted more communication and a better avenue to express his opinion about what should be happening with his matter rather than having to do this hunger strike in order to call attention to his situation.
Matt Katz is an immigration reporter for WNYC. Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, Tanzina.
To read ICE's comment on Galitza's case and their policies around hunger strikes, you can visit our website at thetakeaway.org. Force-feeding detainees, especially in the context of immigration detention, seems to be quite rare. But when it does happen, how does it come to pass? I wanted to get some answers to some of the legal questions here with Ranjana Natarajan. Ranjana is the director of the Civil Rights Clinic at the University of Texas Law School, and she joins us now from Austin. Ranjana, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you for having me.
So how common is force-feeding in ICE facilities? Let's start there.
As you said, we hope that it's exceedingly rare, but the truth is we really don't know because there isn't much transparency from the Department of Homeland Security about its force-feeding practices. It's only when detainees go to court or report this to their counsel that we hear about it in the first place.
And is there a history of force-feeding generally in the United States? Is this some sort of technique that has been used and we just haven't heard about it?
So it's important to understand two things. Number one, there is no federal law or policy that requires force feeding of any inmate, prisoner, or detainee in any context. On the other hand, it's also important to know that hunger striking is an old and very desperate and strong form of protest for people who are in custody, either because they think they're in custody unfairly or because the conditions of their detention are really oppressive. And so it seems like a desperate act to us, but it's also an act to control the last thing that remains within the person's control when they're in custody. So when a government chooses to force feed a prisoner or a detainee, what they're doing is cutting off the last and most sort of vital autonomous decision that an inmate or a detainee can make. It's a very invasive process, not to mention very physically painful. But in that invasive process, what they're doing is saying, you don't have the power to make this decision over your own body.
Now, could they also be saying, we are mandated to keep you alive?
It is definitely true that under the Eighth Amendment for prisoners and under the Due Process Clause for pretrial detainees, and immigration detainees count as pretrial detainees because they're not being punished, all of those inmates and detainees have a right to adequate food, clothing, shelter, and medical care. And in fact, it's detention officials who are responsible for taking the steps to guarantee the safety of the people who are in their custody. Those things are true. And so does it necessarily follow that the government then has the duty to force feed? That's a place where courts have struggled.
What we're noticing in the case that we're examining here, the takeaway, is that according to our reporter, Matt Katz, a lot of this force feeding is happening in the state of Texas. Is there some sort of circuit court decision or something unique about the state of Texas that allows for this type of force feeding as opposed to, say, the state of New Jersey?
It's hard to know why ICE is choosing particular facilities for force feeding its inmates. It might be because the facilities themselves have the medical equipment or have the medical personnel who can administer the involuntary force feeding treatments. Force feeding involves a nasogastric tube going from your nose to your throat to your stomach. It can be very uncomfortable, very painful. There can be very serious complications. It might be that they're sending people to facilities where they have a hospital close by, or where they have the facilities to basically hold them down while they force feed them. In most of these instances, when ICE detainees or other detainees are force fed, they're restrained either in a restraint chair that locks up their arms and legs, or sometimes by medical personnel or by guards while they're being force fed. That's why it's both very painful and very traumatic.
Ranjana Natarajan is the director of the Civil Rights Clinic at the University of Texas School of Law. Ranjana, thanks so much for being with us.
Sure. Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.